Rev it up and welcome to Cars Yeah, show number 2507. Be prepared to be inspired.
This is Cars Yeah, where you'll enjoy interviews with inspiring automotive enthusiasts. Mark Green is here to provide you with a fuel injection of automotive inspiration. So get in, sit down, buckle up, and get ready for a wild ride here on Cars Yeah.
Hello, inspiring automotive enthusiasts, and welcome to Cars Yeah. Today I'm in Washington, D.C. with a very special guest by the name of David Boyce. David, welcome to Cars Yeah. Do you have any gear, and are you ready to release the clutch?
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to have some fun. Now, before I introduce you more properly, and we take a very deep dive into the automotive industry, what's one little thing that people may not know about you, David?
Well, you know, I'm in the Washington, D.C. area, and I've lived here as an adult for most of my life. But my father was in the military, and I actually grew up all over the world, which was a really cool childhood. And I think I went to 13 schools in 12 years.
Oh, my gosh.
So when people ask me where I'm from, I'm like,
everywhere.
You know, I'm from a lot of places. But I've been here long enough that people just, and our businesses have been based here. So, you know, they just assume that I was born and raised here, but that's not the case.
What branch of the service did your father serve in?
My father was in the infantry. He was a soldier.
Cool. Well, you sound a lot like my wife. Her father was in the Marine Corps for 30 plus years, and they lived in a lot of different places, including places overseas. And while she said that was challenging as a kid, you know, hard to make friends, she really enjoys, especially the time she spent out of the country, learning about different cultures and things. So there's a benefit to that that probably makes you a bit more resilient, I would guess, even in business.
I think resilience is a good one. And I think you also become so accustomed to change.
Ah.
You know, kids today, my own children have really pretty much grown up in one place. And while that's wonderful and roots are important, there's a benefit to moving around in different parts of the country, different parts of the world, and having to fit in instantly and get on with it and try to have a, you know, successful childhood. And that's, I think the name of the game for me was change was inevitable. And I just figured out ways to adopt and adapt. And I think that's a lot of people's secret to success in business. Is there how capable are you of changing and how quickly can you adapt to whatever situation's out there? So for me, I kind of consider it foundational to some of the success that I've been fortunate enough to have.
Well, obviously a lot of success. And let me give you a proper introduction. And you're in a field that, boy, talk about change, and especially focused on the automotive sector, how that has changed so dramatically and continues to in a lot of ways. So you're going to educate us a lot here. Let me give you an introduction. Self-made and innovative, there you go, David Boyce is a pioneer in auto industry technology. Throughout his impressive career, he has owned numerous companies in the automotive, tech, RV, marine, and real estate sectors. David co-founded two of the largest tech and consulting companies, AutoMark and Cybercar, in the automotive trade with an enterprise value of $200 million. He co-founded his first technology company, AutoMark, with his father when he was just 22, selling in 2000 as part of one of the largest technology transactions in the automotive history. And in 2008, he broke through a challenging economy. Boy, 2008, that was challenging. And co-founded Team Velocity, a leading market technology provider serving the automotive industry. We'll be back in just a moment, but first a word from our sponsors. So give them a little love. Buckle up. We're going to go on a fast ride today, and we'll be right back. Are you ready to take charge of your financial future? Then let me introduce you to Capitalize Your Finances. It's an online course designed to empower you with the knowledge and tools for mastering your money. This course will help you lay out the ins and outs of budgeting, the importance of emergency funds, investing strategies, and how to plan for a secure retirement. All this presented by financial planner Chris Paniotou. Chris has developed this course to help you effectively navigate your world of finance with confidence. Stop stressing about money and start taking control. Enroll in Capitalize Your Finance online course today and pave your way to financial success. To learn more, go to capitalizepodcast.com/courses, or better yet, go to the Cars Yeah website show notes page for today's show and click on the link under Capitalize Your Finances. You'll be glad you did. Do it today. For several years now, you've heard me talk about Linkage Magazine. I've been a subscriber since the start. Their talented and creative team brings you a spectacular publication and website that shares the automotive passion from a worldwide perspective. Linkage is about driving, restoring, collecting, and firsthand experience at collector car auctions and more. They bring you real-world values plus rational, experienced opinions on the current markets. They cover the automotive world and the people who share our passions. And Linkage Magazine has grown, mailing you 6 issues annually. Join me on this journey with Linkage. They're geared for the automotive life. You can subscribe at linkagemag.com. So, David, I'm not quite sure where to start with you, but I want to go back a little bit before we talk about what you're doing today there at Team Velocity and talk a little bit about how and why you got into the automotive sector. Of course, we're on Cars Yeah. We're all about automotive enthusiasts. So I'm hoping you have some automotive enthusiasm in you there for cars and marks and so forth. But what got you into this field? And we'll take a deeper dive into your business.
You know, Mark, I'm like a lot of people, I think, with the car business. I got into it accidentally. It wasn't something I was seeking. It wasn't something I was looking for. But when I was graduating from college, it's a long story, but I'll
keep
it brief.
That's okay. We've got time.
I was going to go into pharmaceutical sales.
Oh, wow.
That's what I wanted to do. I had an opportunity with a large company in Chicago. And at the very last minute, after 99% of the planning was done and I was on my way to Chicago, they rescinded the offer. I wasn't given the job.
Oh,
and
no.
At the time it was devastating, right? I mean, yeah. In life, you work hard, you do this, you go get your first job. I was raring to go. And so I ended up being, my father, as I mentioned, was in the military, and my parents were stationed in the Washington, D.C. area. So I came back, and in those days, you just went and got a job immediately out of college. There's no gaps in those days. Today's a little different. So I found myself needing a job, and one thing led to another, and the job I was able to get fastest and quickest was inside a car dealership. And I absolutely fell in love with the atmosphere. I fell in love with the people. I fell in love with the cars. I found it very invigorating and exciting. And I kind of fell into it accidentally. So, you know, 6 months later, I ended up starting my first business, and really the rest is history. But that's how I got started. And a lot of people that you meet in the car business did not, I mean, some inherit dealerships and some get into the business because they really wanted to their whole lives. But a lot of people that I've met along the way found themselves in the car business and then fell in love with an industry that they otherwise weren't looking for.
You know, I've heard that, and I've had people on this show, from people that own small dealerships to some that own multiple Mark dealerships. I mean, huge conglomerates and so forth. And a lot of them have said the same thing. Yeah, they kind of fell into it. So that fork in the road that you hit served to be great for you. And your current business, Team Velocity, you serve the industry, and you've got a lot of professionals there.
The company currently has 450 employees at Team Velocity. So it's been growing pretty fast, Mark.
Yeah,
You know, we've been very fortunate to have some success at this company. And, you know, right now it's the market is responding very well to what we're offering. So 450 and climbing more rapidly than I care to sometimes, but you have to have people, you know, people are an important part of every business, as you know.
Well, tell the listeners here what your company does, because I've looked at your website, I saw a video with you in it, and quite an operation you got going there. And with that many people, one would say, well, what on earth are you doing with all those people? So give us a little deeper dive.
Well, Team Velocity is a company that provides a integrated customer experience platform. So to explain it in layman's language to you, if you were you owned a dealership, and it would be very common for you to have 13, 14, 15 even different technology providers that provide you aspects of what it would be like to maybe buy a car, right? Someone would do your website. Another company would do your social marketing. Another company would do your digital advertising. Another company might do your digital retailing. Another company might do your equity mining, and so on and so forth. There's all these silos. We came up with a concept that, what if we created one platform that did it all?
Ah.
So it integrates 14 or 15 different applications into one. For me, it's kind of like my iPhone. You know, I used to have all these different devices and Garmins and pagers and cameras and video cameras. And now all of that is in one device. It's of course, for most of us now, even serves the purpose of being our wallet. And that's what Team Velocity does. We have a customer experience platform that combines 14 or 15 very common pieces of technology. And we built it from the ground up as one platform. And it's been an absolute dream and a labor of love to be able to put it together, because it helps consumers much easier complete transactions with dealership. And that's what technology is supposed to do. It's supposed to make it easier for a customer to do business, in this case, with a dealership. And we provide kind of an end-to-end solution that both on the sales side and service side that accomplishes that. So that's what we do.
Well, it's very cool, because you think about running a company and having all these vendors, and I can only imagine, are they all talking to each other? And they all going down the same path? Of course, the answer would be no. There's almost no way that they could. So having all of these services in one place has got to be a wonderful thing for dealerships. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about some of the specifics, one being power of predictive analytics, because the car dealership, you know, I was thinking back to when I was a kid, and I grew up in Southern California, and there was a guy named Cal Worthington. And Cal Worthington, which you probably know who I'm talking about, would have these commercials where he'd say, go see Cal, and he'd have a tiger or a giraffe or a rhino or hippo walking through the aisles of cars. And you'd go to this dealership, and it'd be a weird experience, a good or bad experience for many people. Not a fun experience. So when you think about analytics, though, for dealerships now, all the analytics they have. So talk about predictive analytics and how you've shaped the future of car buying and enhanced the personalization experience, obviously to maximize sales, because that's what dealers want to do, right?
Right. So I'll give you a real world example that maybe make it easier for the audience, is that if you owned, I don't know, you said Cal Worthington Ford, let's use an F-150, right? The most popular truck in the country. People who buy F-150s love them, right? They buy them over and over again. Yeah. So you go to your dealership's website that you bought, let's say, two F-150s from, and you kind of like to buy a third one. And the first thing that you get asked on this website is, what's your name? what kind of car are you driving?
Yeah.
How many miles are on it? What condition is it in? Does it have a recall? I mean, it's utterly ridiculous when the customer could simply punch their phone number in. It would immediately pull up all of the current information about the customer, which moves the customer way down the field in terms of trying to buy another vehicle. So that's an example of how we take predictive analytics and are able to help determine what someone's going to need. You use Amazon, I assume, right? You have an Amazon account?
Oh, yeah, I think they come to my house every day, I think.
they come here every day, sometimes twice a day. But the reason that we both love Amazon is because they make it so easy for us to buy products. Mm-hmm. And they predictively analyze, for example, you bought this book. Oh, you might also like this book. I just recently had some shoulder surgery done, just a rotator cuff, nothing major. And literally Amazon served, because of I was searching for some ice machines and things like that, Amazon served up things like pillows that I never would have thought about that were highly helpful for me.
Yeah.
And they do a great job. But let's apply that to the car business. If you're driving an F-150, what do you think the chances of someone's going to trade an F-150 in for a Mustang? It hardly ever happens.
Right.
No, they generally go, our predictive analytics show that customers at particular dealerships move into very specific models based upon what they're currently driving. And if someone's leasing a vehicle, they tend to lease another vehicle. If someone has 6 payments remaining, that means they might be able to get out early and qualify for things. So we're able to predict to a very accurate level what somebody is going to buy, how they're going to pay for it, when they're going to buy it, and if they're going to come back and have the vehicle serviced at the dealership. There's all kind of predictive analysis. It can be based upon geography. It can be based upon shopping behavior. It can be based upon your relationship with a dealership, which could be either active or lost. So predictive analytics is a major part of this customer experience platform, because we want to get ahead of it for the customer. You know, when someone comes to the website, they shouldn't tell us what services they want. We should tell them what services they need. And there's a big difference there. How can we help you accomplish what you want to today? And we have been getting very good marks in the industry, primarily from OEMs, who really like the approach that we're taking, which is not 20 years old. Most of the companies we compete with are legacy providers that have been doing this for 20 years the same way. We've taken a very Amazon-like approach to a major transaction, which is purchasing a vehicle and or servicing a vehicle can also be major transactions. So that's, I don't know if that answers your question not, but
yeah, absolutely.
That's how we do it.
And that's a nice tie-in. You talked about Amazon and targeted ads and consumer behavior analysis. That sounds like another piece of the puzzle here so that you can personalize that shopping experience and offer things that even sometimes the customer may not even know exists, but they want.
It happens. I'll use Ford as an example. Ford has a concept they call private offers. You obviously have heard of rebates. You're in the car business. You know how that works. So there could be a rate discount. There could be a rebate on a vehicle. But Ford, in addition to that, offers their customers what they call private offers. In other words, it's a specific offer to a customer to help them potentially get into a car. It's not available to the public. So imagine if you're one of those customers and you're on a website and you have no idea if that private offer is available to you or not. With our platform, we automatically put the private offer in front of the customer. As soon as they sign into the website, we say, okay, you are entitled to this special $2,000 discount on the following type vehicles. It just so much more the way it's supposed to be by treating customers like customers. And what most of the technology does in our industry is it treats customers like the public. As if they've never bought an F-150, they've never serviced it, they've never bought it. And it's a frustrating experience for consumers when they're used to, you know, Starbucks can tell you down to the how many ounces of milk you want in your specialized coffee. I mean, so if they can do it on a cup of coffee, it should be done on a car purchase. And that's what we've been doing.
Well, it's very cool. My next door neighbor has had many Ford trucks, and he bought a few years ago when they first came out, the Raptor. And they did something really cool that kind of shocked me because he tended to buy cars brand new and keep them a long time. That's what I do. And he bought a Raptor. And within about 4 months, they said, would you like to come out to Utah and go to the Raptor school? Come out and drive some Raptors in the dirt and see what they can really do. And he went and did that. And as part of that experience, they kept following up with him. Well, guess what? Next year, they came out with a new model with some upgrades. And they convinced him to buy another Raptor and trade his in. And I kind of looked at that and I went, this is genius marketing, because here's a guy that never gets rid of a car after a year. That's just not his, you know, he pays cash and he keeps it for 10, 15 years. And they convinced him to go buy a new one through
and all,
yeah. So,
and that was planned. I mean, that was,
of course,
Ford is one of our largest relationships. Mm-hmm. And people who have F-150s commonly get Raptors. And once you get a Raptor, you're really at the high level of their offerings, but they tend to come back and buy them more often. So the marketing, predictive analytics is really important part of our platform. It helps us market to people like your neighbor, because we know so much about them going into it. It's much more sophisticated than the public probably are, at least our platform, than the public probably thinks. And, you know, we've been very fortunate to be kind of a pioneer in this part of the industry. And it's probably because our technology was built on the latest platforms, right? It's newer. The majority of the platform has been built since 2016. And so we just had a great foundation from a technology stack perspective to build upon. And I think that's helped us significantly.
So obviously you've made this about technology, because another aspect of my understanding is the consumer buying journey, understanding the stages. You could even, like my neighbor, alter his stages. The guy was very consistent the way he did things, but they made a few moves here that went, well, you came out and drove the new Raptor. Why don't you come out and try the new one? And, you know, we'll make the transaction easy. We'll buy the old one from you because there's a very limited number, give you a good price and put you in a new one. And he did it. So that consumer buying journey, your platform then understands those stages, right? Versus a guy or a woman working in a dealership who has to kind of have a Rolodex, and there's an old word, right, for both of us, of list of people to stay in touch with. This helps them automize, if there's a word like that, this whole process of the consumer's journey.
Exactly right. Our technology puts a visibility into the consumer's journey. And as you know, just by purchasing anything in life, but certainly a car, it's a journey. Most people don't buy a car in a day. Your friend didn't decide on that Raptor, the first one he bought or the second one he bought, in a day. It was a journey. And we are, because we handle the entire customer experience platform from initial engagement to a final transaction. So we know when customers are, for example, using Google to shop and what they're shopping for. We know when they go to the website, what they're looking for. We know if they're a customer or they're not. We know if they have a equity in that vehicle or not. Your friend was able to get out of that current Raptor and into a new one because he was in a good financial position to do so. They made it easy for him because there were not a lot of Raptors available on the used truck perspective. All of these are data points. All of these are predictive things that can happen. So your friend was more likely than other people to get into a new one based upon factors. So technology drives a lot of that. Technology knows which stage you're in. And therefore, the marketing that goes out, we'll just keep talking about your friend, the marketing that goes out to your friend was very specific, very personalized. Hey, here's your payment on your old one. Here would be the payment on your new one. Here are the five things that this one does that yours doesn't, and so on and so forth. And you have a private offer or you have a rebate or whatever it might be. And so we're able to facilitate that from, again, from that initial engagement, just to identifying who is statistically most likely to purchase or service a vehicle, all the way through the facilitating the transaction online, even, and making it easy for customers. During COVID, we had to become extremely good at helping customers purchase vehicles entirely online and then delivering them to their homes.
Now, so, is AI starting to make a play in your business?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think there's three areas that AI is helpful. One is just internal productivity. We're using AI to make the 450 employees we have more productive. The second is this kind of conversational AI, where you're on a website and you want to converse, you want to get something done, but you don't want to go through the whole website to figure out where you go to schedule service or get a coupon or see if a vehicle's in stock. And you just have this conversation with a robot, a really smart robot AI, and that we're able to use to help consumers complete things in a conversational way, where they're just hey, do you own a current vehicle without? Yes. What's your phone number? Let me pull up your records, right? Yes. Is this you? Yes. What would you like to have done? I'd like the oil change. Great. You know, I see you normally come in during the week. We have Wednesday or Thursday available. We'll do one of those days work for you. That's all AI driven. And then of course you have generative AI, which is AI producing marketing materials. For example, AI could produce a 30-second short video on that Raptor that your friend bought and do it and produce it in under 2 seconds on the fly. Crazy, right? With a voice, price, images, payments, key features of the vehicle. It's astounding how quickly we've been able to incorporate AI into our technology platform, both to help our customers and to help their customers, but also to do some internal productivity improvements.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing. It really is. Some days I talk to people involved in this stuff and I go, oh, how do you keep up? It's just changing so rapidly. You know, some of the hot topics in the automotive industry these days, one is CDK, which by understanding CDK Global, is that company that provides software and technology?
Yeah, CDK Global, yeah, is I think the most popular dealership management system is what they call it, a DMS, that really operationally runs dealerships. Mm. Yeah.
And how is that? Or do you work with that, or how is that, or are you creating your own system that help dealerships?
No, we just integrate with dealer management systems.
Gotcha.
A lot of the dealer management systems are a gold mine for transactional data. So every time you sell a car or service a car or do a trade or buy a part, it's done inside that system. So what we do is we pull out of those systems on a nightly basis. I think we do it twice a day now. We update our system with all of the transactions, right? So we know if someone has bought a car and how they paid for it. We know if someone serviced and so on and so forth. The end of the road is that initial transaction, right? So what we want to do is to get people to transact. The DMS tells us who's transacted. And then, of course, we start marketing to them for follow-up to make sure that they have a good ownership experience. And the better the ownership experience, the more likely they are to come back to the dealership when it's time for them to upgrade into a newer vehicle.
Of course. Yeah, that's the key. The other one is, of course, a hot topic these days, electric vehicles. And I'd love to hear your perspective on what's happening with them now, because obviously massive push, not only from governments pushing, but companies. I've had many companies on the show here that are producing EVs. And of course, now all of a sudden we have a big challenge ahead of us. And it seems like the brakes are being put on, even though I love those regenerative brakes in electric vehicles. They're a lot of fun to play with. What's your opinion of what's happened in the EV world? And if your crystal ball is clear enough to see, what are we going to see in the next 4 or 5 years? Big question.
Well, look, I think it's a big question. Look, for me, from my perspective of selling them, right, and servicing them, there was a massive effort by our government to push EVs. I mean, there just was. And I think that turned out to be a mistake. Many dealerships have significant amounts of inventory that they can't sell at this moment. And you'll see a lot of rebates by the end of the year. You'll see a lot of discounts. I think it's obvious. Most people consider the winner in this space are the manufacturers who focused more on hybrids. I think Toyota is generally considered the company that has done the best job with balancing gas-powered engines and electric vehicles. That being said, electric vehicles are becoming more popular. Hybrids are becoming more popular. I'm not sure what the overall percentage of vehicles sold are EVs. I'd like to look that up. But I think we're going to see, you know, double-digit growth each year. But still, it's a very small number now, right? So double-digit growth, it doesn't mean much. But I think we'll see double-digit growth each year as the as they become more affordable and as the manufacturers, you know, learn how to market them. And I think we're still going to have some federal tax credits that are pretty nice, especially when they're around $7,500. But, you know, we'll see what happens with the, depending upon who the next administration is. But there's a chance that those federal tax credits will go away because most people that can buy an electric vehicle can probably afford it without the tax credit. So, you know, there's a lot of different angles on electric vehicles, but I'm a fan of them and the technology that they bring to the consumer. And I think they're going to be, you know, a successful part of our industry. I don't look at it as something separate. I look at it as something that's part of our industry. It's just another type of vehicle that some consumers will want to buy. And I think our industry became a little consumed with it. But in fairness, I think some of that was outside influence,
I
have not seen. I've not seen before. I mean, I really, you know, I've been in the business a long time and I haven't seen, you know, maybe cash for clunkers. That was kind of an interesting federal program.
That was a weird one.
That I thought in my lifetime. But I, you know, these type of tax credits are unprecedented for someone to buy a car.
Well, I think once they can get the infrastructure set up so you feel safe that you can go charge your car. That's the other key part. And I had a guest on the show a few weeks ago that did a tour in the new ID. Buzz VW over in Europe. And one of the things they encountered over there, and I thought Europe was kind of ahead of us in this perspective, but apparently not, is that everywhere they went and had to charge was a separate charging station owned by somebody different. And all the apps and credit cards didn't work on all the chargers. It was like, what? You know, like here where you think you can just pull up and put a card in and charge. So yeah, that's where I see the big disconnect having had. But we could talk about that for hours.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, the infrastructure, it'll catch, you know, it'll get there.
Eventually.
I mean, I think that's something that eventually will happen. Right now, it's probably the biggest complaint from people who have, that worries people about getting an electric vehicle is the frustration of charging it.
Yeah.
And if you're popping around town and you're a day driver, great. You just pop around town and plug it in at night. But if you're someone who needs to go a distance here and there, it adds a lot of time to a trip.
Oh, gosh.
That's for sure.
Yeah. And here in the U.S., we're such a big country. People like to take road trips. That's part of our freedom. That makes it difficult. You know, the last piece of this, although it's kind of a funky piece, is self-driving cars. And I wonder if you could just touch on that briefly, how that affects what you're doing. Because we think of self-driving cars as owned by a business that you hire, kind of like Uber. You hire them, they come, they pick you up, take you around, and then you leave. But self-driving cars, what's your perspective?
You know, I think self-driving cars are going to have a place out there. It seems like you think they're around the corner. I remember like 3 years ago, they were being talked about all the time.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be a while before just the regulations and some of the safety problems. I think the public is going to have a very narrow window on margin of error with this.
Yeah.
I mean almost zero level margin of error. And so I think it's going to be a little while before we see, you know, self-driving vehicles out there. I clearly there's a market for this for businesses, certainly for paid for rides.
Yeah. Delivering things to people or
delivering things. I mean, yeah, there's a definite market for it. You can see it. The question is, can we do it safely enough that the public accepts it, you know, and it's just a very small margin of error. And I don't think we've gotten anywhere close to it yet.
No, probably not.
But I'm a fan, you know, I'm a fan of technology, so I'd like to see it be successful. And I'm sure given the companies that are involved with it and the payoff that's involved with it, I think we will see those in the near future. But we're not there yet.
Yeah, I go to Arizona often to visit my grandkids now, and I see them driving around there, and we just got back from there. I think it's Waymo that has cars there. And
yep.
Very interesting to see one drive by and go, there's nobody in that car. That's kind of yeah. Weird, but kind of cool. And having a mother who's aging now that is having trouble driving, there's a great thing. And she doesn't like getting in Ubers because she goes, I'm in a car with a stranger. I don't like that. I've driven my whole life. But if a car could just pull up and take her to her doctor's appointment and there's nobody there to deal with, you know, I don't know if she would trust that yet, but it'll be here. You know, before I get into a little bit more about you, one last thing I wanted to ask you about was your perspective on big company takeovers of dealerships. And I've seen that in where I live in the Pacific Northwest, where it's been a dealership that is a family owned. People know the people there. They're so customer focused. And then this big mega company that owns massive number of dealers comes in and all that personality evaporates. And everyone starts saying, what happened? This isn't a fun place anymore. That trend seems to be growing. Maybe a person like Penske is buck the system because you go to a Penske dealership and they're insane, meaning great is what I mean to say.
Yes.
But what's your perspective on that? And how is your system helping those big no-face companies? Because that's kind of the way you feel. When you buy a car, you want to buy it from somebody you feel good about, not from a mega company that, who owns this place? Where's the owner? Well, the GM. Well, no, he's not the owner. Where's Phil? He used to own the Porsche dealership here. How are you guys helping big companies like that?
Well, the technology that you would use at a big group of dealerships, you know, consolidation is happening in every industry. And the car business is probably having more of it than it has had in the past. As you know, because you've been in it a long time, these are families that have handed these businesses down for generations. You know, three and four generations isn't uncommon. And now we have regional groups that are starting to pop up that just want to get bigger. You know, and so they'll go from 10 stores to 25 or 30. And that you still have these are still family, generally privately held companies that are just getting bigger in the area they're in. And they do a nice job of trying to make that work because they're part of the community. But we also have a lot of larger publicly traded groups that are not part of that particular community. You know, they're business people that are, you know, consolidating dealerships that fit the criteria of what they're looking for. That being said, it has been healthy because there are some dealerships that get bought that probably should be bought. You know, the fourth generation isn't necessarily as talented as the first generation or the
right.
second.
Yeah, or is driven.
Or is driven, and they're oftentimes very hands-off. And so when a local business doesn't have local people there that own it, love it, appreciate it, and take care of the customers, that's also not necessarily a great thing. So our business is constantly evolving. Our technology works the same for a family-owned single point, you know, Ford dealership just as well as it does for someone who owns 100 dealerships. The technology, that's where we are able to personalize things and make it feel like a better transaction. See, when you go to buy a car, you probably have relationships. I'm sure you do with the years you have been in the business. And you count on those relationships, and that's important to you. But sometimes when those people retire or they move on from the car business. You need technology. It's kind of funny, right? It's a little creepy sometimes when it knows too much about you,
yeah.
But yet it's incredibly useful, right? So when you go to a website and it says, hey, Mark, looks like you're ready to upgrade your whatever, Toyota 4Runner. I have a couple of vehicles in stock that I found for you that I thought would be perfect. Well, that's what a great salesperson would do and somebody you have a relationship with. The technology can actually do that for you. So I think that we are trying to personalize the experience for consumers, regardless of who owns the dealership. You can't replace that. I mean, that I'm with you. I'm relationship oriented. And I don't think there's anything quite like shaky hands and buy a car so fun, you know, and you want to have it should be so fun. It's not.
Usually it's not, but if you have that relationship, it is.
Yeah, you're exactly. So we serve every size automotive dealer there is, but from the smallest ones to the largest ones. And our technology platform, I think, provides them equal benefits.
Inspiration. I like to talk about what I call our driving inspirations. Who's been probably the most influential person in your life that you look back now and say, that person really has helped me get to where I am today?
Gosh, there are so many people that have helped me get to where I am today. I've been very fortunate to have some wonderful business partners and mentors along the way. But I mean, if I had to pick one, it's got to be my dad. He was highly successful. He started out as a private in the Army. He was drafted to go to Vietnam. He found himself at Officer's Candidate School and retired as a two-star major general off the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Wow.
So very few people have that career. And so I just learned so much from him, not only in my personal life, but really the principles of business. We became business partners after he retired from the military, which was early. I mean, he was a major general at 51 or 52 years old, which it, wow. To start out as a private, the trajectory of his career, was really impressive. So I have to say my dad was really inspirational for me. He taught me a lot of lessons and a lot of how to approach things. And I think I was so fortunate because I had those lessons in me at 22 years old. When I was probably a little too young to become an entrepreneur, but I was confident for some reason because I had been raised by these two very successful parents. And it gave me enormous amounts of confidence that I otherwise may not have had. So I'd have to say him.
Well, my thank you to your father for his service. It's fantastic. And your mom and you and siblings, if you have them, for your sacrifices, because being from a military family, I understand that. How about a big challenge? No doubt with the companies you've built and the things you've done, you probably face challenges every single day. But is there one in particular you could share that you look back now and think, that really helped define me?
I'll touch back on the story. I mean, only because we mentioned it earlier. I think the best thing that ever happened to me was the first big failure I had, or it felt like a failure, which is not getting that job. I mean, I really wanted to get into pharmaceutical sales. I wanted to move to Chicago. I had a roommate picked out. I had plans. And this letter shows up. You know, back in those days, you didn't get an email. You got a letter in the mailbox, yeah, and said, sorry, this is not going to work out. Mm. And no explanation.
Yeah, even worse.
This is a sizable company, right? And I just remember feeling so defeated because the trajectory that I was on felt great. And I opened a letter and 5 minutes later, I felt very defeated. And I think that that's how I was, like, perseverance and kind of picking myself up and going, okay, I'm going to go out and get a job and I'm just going to get started. And I think there's a great quote that I like from Nelson Mandela. And it's, I never lose. I either win or learn. And I think that I was a really great byproduct of something that was a failure, but I didn't lose. I just learned from it. And 2 weeks later, I was in the car business. And 6 months later, I was starting my first company. And the rest is history. So I would say for me, an early failure was a catalyst for really the rest of my career. And absolutely, something I never forget.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love it. So special vehicle. Now, you're in the car world, so I assume you like cars. Perhaps there's a special vehicle that you've had in your life you could share a story about?
Oh, yeah. I, just sticking with this theme, my parents ended up living in, you said you live in the Pacific Northwest?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So my father was stationed at Fort Lewis, Washington.
Yep.
And from Fort Lewis, Washington, I ended up going to Washington State, but my parents got assigned to Germany. And when you go overseas, you can only bring, we had two cars, we could only bring one. So they brought the more practical car. And my dad had this Fiat Spider, 1976 Fiat Spider, racing green, tan interior, but there was this pride and joy. And he bought in New York City, and it was old, or, you know, maybe 10 years old or something. And he said, I'm going to give this car to you because I can't take it with me. And I'm oh my God, I would never absolutely in a million years. And so I had this really cool car that he gave me, and I was able to drive it back to college. And I had so many fun memories with it. It was a convertible. The top was down all the time.
Of course.
And I just thought I was, you know, I had a pair of Ray-Bans on and life was great. And so that car, I have so many memories of trips up into Idaho, to Coeur d'Alene, and driving that thing all over the state of Washington, which is a beautiful state, particularly in the summer, to drive in with a top down. So yeah, that for me, the Fiat Spider gave me a very positive feeling when I was in it.
How fun. Yeah, we've got some great roads here, and we've had a great spring and summer this year. So nice driving. Yeah. So I like to crawl on my guest's head and be a little bit of a car psychologist. If you were manifest, reincarnated as a car, not what you want to be, though. This is how you perceive how your mind works as a vehicle. What would you be and why?
Oh, my goodness. That's a question.
Yep.
So just to make sure I understand, what car... If I could be a car, what kind of car would I be and why?
Not so much if you could be, because a lot of people, I'd love to be a Ferrari F1 or, you know, whatever. This is more about how you perceive how you work as a person, the man in the mirror, as a vehicle. Now, as an example, some people have said, we'll go back to I'm a Ford F-150. I just get stuff done. I'm not that shiny and fancy. Other people thought of themselves differently. So there you go.
Okay. I got the question now.
Okay.
All right. I think I would be an SUV because I like to consider myself a utility player. I'm not really good at anything. I'm decent at a lot of things.
Okay.
And I think sport utilities are kind of that way. You know what I mean? You can use them a lot. I'd like it to be kind of fun, sexy, you know? So I've got a car in mind. I got a car in mind, that I really like. I was actually looking at one last night, and I think a hybrid, just because it's healthier and a little more versatile. I like to think of myself as fairly healthy. I try anyways to do the right things and so on and so forth. So Porsche has a new Cayenne out. It's a GTS hybrid that is an EV, but you know, it's a hybrid, a gas hybrid. Yeah. It's fast.
Oh yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful. It's the right size. And you know, Porsche is such a classic brand. So I guess if I had to pick a car that fit my, I don't know if I would own it, but I certainly, if it had to fit my personality profile, I guess I'd go with that one. Tough question.
Well, it's a unique question, that's for sure. I'm a huge Porsche fan, and I tell you, that Cayenne GTS, that thing is amazing. It's a rocket ship.
My goodness.
Yeah.
A rocket.
Yeah, it's a, they're insanely fast. I mean, I think they set some records on the Nürburgring there in that car, because it just, it does things that an SUV shouldn't do. So I love it. Great choice there. How about a great book that you'd like to share today that taught you some valuable things?
I love to read, both fiction and nonfiction. I would say there's a couple of books that I have enjoyed. An oldie but goodie is Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers. I don't know if you've had a chance to read it yet, but it's just a great book, and it just reminds you that, you know, life isn't about getting lucky. Life is about working hard, putting 10,000 hours into something, and then you become an expert in it, and you can have some success. A lot of people think when they meet people like me or you or other people, like, oh, you're lucky, or aren't you lucky? You've had so much success. You're lucky. And I'm certainly have benefited from a lot of, I guess, a lot of luck and a lot of good fortune. But there's also been a massive amount of hard work along the way.
No kidding.
I'd also say this is recent, and this was a popular book, so this isn't anything unusual. But I don't know if you read Will Goddard's book. It's called Unreasonable Hospitality, And it's about the restaurant industry. It's really good. I'd recommend reading it because I got a copy of it for all of our leaders and we talked about it. We spent some time on it, but the book is just about, he's just a famous chef or a restaurateur in New York. And he wanted to win these 5-star Michelin awards and be recognized as that. And he found out that the way to do it wasn't necessarily through the food, which you would think. Mm-hmm. It was about astonishing his customers in unexpected ways. And it was just it's a great book that opens up your mind on how you can better take care of your customers. And I just love the title, Unreasonable Hospitality. It's just a great book. So if you haven't read it, I'd recommend it to anyone in the audience.
It reminds me a little bit of a book I read years ago in a company that I was part of that we were building by Carl Sewell, Customers for Life.
And, yes. Yeah. Great book.
Which is obviously he was, you know, in the car business and a lot of the things that he implemented, my local BMW dealership where we bought, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 cars from now, instituted a lot of his practices into that dealership. And they always have done a great job of taking care of cars and so forth. So yeah, that book has been recommended before and I need to read it because I know I would love it. So Unreasonable Hospitality. Yeah. I remind our listeners, there's a great place on the Carzio website called Guest Recommended Books, where these both books will be. There's over 3,000 books listed there. So check them out and made it real easy for you for a quick click to buy to our friends at Amazon. So let's go on the ultimate drive before I let you go today. I've kept you a long time, but I really appreciate you sticking with me. This is a fun thing. I will buy you any car in the world and I will put you in that car any place in the world. And I'll put anybody you would like with you, including somebody that's no longer with us, which opens the world of opportunities. So what does the ultimate drive look like for a guy like you, David?
Let's stick with the theme, since you can buy me any car I want. I'll just go with a classic, like Porsche 911 convertible, right? We'll go classic.
Okay.
And I would probably want to pick someone who's no longer here, just because I think you can get some perspectives. I'm going to go with someone who I really like. And who's Muhammad Ali.
Oh, okay. There you go.
I love to be driving up the West Coast. I could just see Muhammad Ali in his black Ray-Ban chilling back when he was, you know, in his heyday. And I would love to just hop up, you know, maybe the West Coast of the United States and pick his brain and his perspectives on how he was so successful and even things that were controversial with him, what was in his mind and why. And I think also, too, he's got this fantastic quote. I think it defined him more than most people think it did. And I'd like to learn more about this. I like to think I've got a little bit of this in me as well. And the quote is, the fight is won or lost far away from witnesses, in the gym, behind the lines, and on the road, long before I danced under those lights. And so Muhammad Ali was such a showman, right? I mean, he was so incredible, and people like that or didn't like that. I happen to like it, but when the lights were off, I mean, he was out working, you know, all day long on his craft and getting in shape and reading the right things and preparing for dancing under those lights. But he was able to recognize the differences in it. And I just think there's something about and obviously he's one of the greatest boxers of all time too. So I don't know. There's a lot of people I would certainly pick. But
that sounds like fun.
Exactly. I remember, if you remember, he was a pretty funny guy well. He had a great sense of humor. And I'd like to dive into that. That's a great question. That's one I'll ask other people.
Okay. No, I love that one too. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, most definitely. It ties to a lot of, I've had hundreds of race car drivers on this show, and a lot of them have said the race is won before you even get to the track. And that goes back to the prep.
You mentioned a guy like Roger Penske. I mean, what a legend. I mean, the guy.
Oh, gosh. He's amazing.
We work with some of his dealerships. They're immaculate. Everyone's prepared. Everyone's professional. I mean, he's obviously a legend in the racing community, but obviously in the automotive retail world as well. They don't get much better than that.
No, the captain. Yeah, that guy just blows me away. I mean, he has definitely set up system procedures that everybody should follow. Absolutely everybody, even if they're delivering your milk to your house in the morning. They should do what Roger Penske's team does. Yeah. You have taken us on a wonderful journey, and I want to thank you for spending so much time with me today. Now, I know from looking you up and learning about you on your website, you are a guy into quotes. You've given and shared a couple quotes today. Is there one in particular that you'd like to share and leave with us in our minds?
Yeah, I'll give you a quote. I like quotes. It'll be a quote from my dad.
Okay.
And it's a family kind of quote, and it's simple. Here it is.
Okay.
Change, whether good or bad, is resisted with equal intensity.
Yeah, yeah.
And so in business and in life, you're going to get hit with some curveballs and some change. And you can either resist it, which sometimes is necessary, or you can't. But people don't discern often between good change and bad change. It's just change, and they're not comfortable with it. So I have learned in business that when I put in organizational changes or anything that we're changing, that it's going to be I think everyone's going to love my ideas, but they don't.
Of course. Why wouldn't they?
They just don't like change. Yeah, yeah. One of my clients who I love, so the only people who like change are babies. who are having their diapers changed. Other than that, no one likes it.
Some of them don't like that either, having raised two kids.
Exactly. So we're that'd be mine. Change, whether good or bad, is resisted with equal intensity. We use that one a lot inside the companies.
I love it. Very cool. How can people learn more about Team Velocity?
Our website is really good. TeamVelocityMarketing.com is a great way to learn more about what we do. And if you want to schedule a demonstration, or if there are plenty of ways to do that on the website. So I think that's a great start.
Here we go. Awesome. I want to do a shout out to some folks that helped get you and I together today. Cassie Calva and Liz Sanchez at Society 22 and your assistant, Lisa Hutchins. Great team you have around you helping you. So thank you, ladies, very, very much. David, thank you for being so generous today with your time and expertise and sharing what you've learned and what you're doing. Thank you for being around, for helping those of us who love to consume cars make it more interesting and fun. Until you and I talk again, my friend, I'll see you down the road.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciated our time together. It was a great talk, and congratulations on all your success with the show.
Thank you. Being a professional automotive technician today requires an understanding of technology, computers, and electrical systems that are highly advanced and very complex. Cars Yeah is pleased to support TechForce Foundation. It's one of our charities of choice, and its efforts to help young people pursue the technical education and careers as automotive techs. Through scholarships, grants, and good old-fashioned hands-on experience with cars, trucks, boats, and more, TechForce and Cars Yeah are working to connect young people with viable careers in the automotive sector. Join us by visiting techforce.org today.
Thank you so much for joining us on today's ride here at Cars Yeah. Drive on over to carsyeah.com to find show notes and inspiring automotive fun. Download your free copy of Filler Up, a fun book filled with gorgeous photographs of fuel filler fun, including quotes from more inspiring automotive enthusiasts. Download your copy today, and we'll see you next time on Cars Yeah!